You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What's up, everyone? Welcome. Allegedly, according to Trevor, we should not have played the song. Lose the game, don't play the song. But we don't have another intro. So until we get another intro, we're just going to have to play that one. I don't have any other answers. What I do have, though, are the threes, both of them. Jackson Brown, how are you, man?
Well, Ross, all things considered, I'm doing all right, but really wish we were experiencing, a little different feeling after this weekend, but we're great.
Yeah, I said that to Willis up in the press box. I was just like, man, can you imagine? And don't get up in my business, Bison fans. It wasn't my fault. Jinxes aren't real. But I was just like, man, could you imagine just like marinating on this thing for 2 weeks with a playoff or with a bye week? Like just. This is the only Bison football you have to remember. This is 21-7 at the time. Like, just chilling on this beauty for 2 weeks. Trev, we're not chilling on any beauty, are we?
No, we're not. But the sun rose, and I do have some positives, believe it or not, to take away from that game that I think we can look on, and we'll discuss that throughout this pod.
All right. Positives. Interesting. Good to know. I guess the news, like, how do you even discuss the news outside of the Phoenix Sproles situation? Came out, Phoenix Sproles no longer a member of the North Dakota State football team. He's been removed from the roster. Matt Entz gave a no comment on that deal. We're not going to get into specifics. I don't think that's necessary. Basically, and folks, I mean, you can check on social media. It's a hotly contested thing. My only take from the relatively, I don't know, inside information that I have is it's got nothing to do with like Rome is burning. People are not jumping off of a sinking ship. You know, that's not, I know it doesn't look great. You lose to South Dakota State and then, a kid wants to jump ship. But this is a kid who, is looking to go somewhere else. Fine. And didn't want to play a fifth game because that removes that, because Fee played right away. So Phoenix is not a sixth-year guy. He's a fifth-year guy. So with the COVID situation, with that year not having to count, he can still take his four-game redshirt. And that's apparently what happened, is the young man wanted to move on or wanted to play an additional season somewhere, get more education paid for, and more power to him, though it is clear that the more power to him aspect is not sitting well with everyone. And look, I get it. Phoenix is a high-profile kid. NIL was able to take advantage of all those things. And the TikTok with the bazillion followers and Instagram and all of it. I understand when your production doesn't match that profile, it will irritate some people. I don't personally care. You're a young, good-looking kid with a billion TikTok followers. Good for you. I got no issue with that. But when you're being judged based on what you're producing on the field and it doesn't necessarily match that, I can understand where that rubs people the wrong way. JB, you certainly spent more time playing with Phoenix. any takes, and I certainly don't want you get you in trouble with your friend. Don't want to, like, I'm not trying to stir stuff right now. I just kind of want to get your take.
Yeah, it's, you know, anytime you see a guy that's been in the program for that long, anytime you see him go, it's tough, and you have a lot of questions. A lot of questions unanswered right now. I'm sure he's making the best decision for himself, but, you know, it's tough to see a guy who's been around the program for so long and meant a lot to the organization, you know, leave midseason, especially after a loss like this, where you look for, you know, some of these veteran guys and whatnot to rally. You know, it's tough, but I'm sure he made the right decision for himself. So we'll see going forward.
Travis, your room, you know, I think wide receivers, probably not necessarily you, but wide receivers get a reputation, apparently, you know, occasionally. It's sometimes it's a me position. And I think, you know, as I mentioned, the social media stuff with Phoenix, I think he ended up with somewhat of a me reputation. Your thoughts on him moving on and sort of managing that room right now from an expectation standpoint, from a loss of leadership standpoint. I actually was really impressed with the wide receivers in the South Dakota State game. They made the plays put in front of them, which, you know, potentially could have been writing on the wall for Phoenix. I think he still would have found playing time had he made his way back. But DJ Hart's balling. Braylon Henderson's balling. Zach Mathis is balling. It's not like the wide receivers didn't take advantage.
Right. I think from a productivity standpoint out of that room moving forward, I don't think this makes much of a difference. That's not a knock on Phoenix. That's not to try to bring him down in any way. I wish him nothing but the best in whatever, you know, he pursues after this. But I think for the most part, this really just signifies the type of era that we're in college football as a whole. You don't expect this with the type of program that NDSU is, but I think it is unavoidable for the most part in terms of having just zero guys leave in the middle of the season, and where NDSU is going and the goals that this team has just doesn't align with where Phoenix is at today. And right, wrong, or indifferent, he's just no longer on the team as a result. And, you know, I'm sure in his mind, Phoenix had moments in this program that stand out, like the catch he had in Target Field at Butler from Trey Lance. I think that was Trey Lance's, like, I've arrived throw. And Phoenix was the recipient of that. And then his run in the national championship game with the snow falling down and taking the lead against James Madison. I think when he produced alongside Trey Lance and Christian Watson in 2019, he probably attributes himself to that. And he sees those guys in the NFL and he has friends playing in the Big 12. And I think he probably has those type of aspirations. Now, my take is that I don't know if that door is going to be open. We will see probably very shortly. But it's just an interesting dynamic of where the state of college football is today. And I'm sure he has big goals, and that's fine. It's just that if you have goals that don't align with where this current team stands, you just can't be a part of it. And that's okay. They'll move on. They'll respond just fine. And, you know, from a leadership standpoint, sometimes when that noise is gone, it sometimes galvanizes guys. So I think they'll be fine moving forward, to be honest. And that's my take on it. At surface level, I think it can seem like, you had already mentioned, I think you made a good point, is that it seems like doom and gloom based off the timing. I don't get that sense. And, you know, whatever he pursues is his choice. And I don't think this will be the last that we see of it. Not necessarily this season. I don't think we'll see any more of that this season, fingers crossed at least. But with this whole NIL thing going on and the transfer rules changing where you don't have to sit out a year, it does open up that door. And, you know, maybe we'll see this in the future. And it's just not as I guess, newsworthy as it maybe would have been 10 years ago. So very interesting to say the least. And, you know, he is no longer going to be in that receiver room. So.
Yeah. And I think a big opportunity or a big ask here for Noah Pauley. I think Phoenix, whether you viewed him as a leader or not, and I, you know, we're not in that room, but you just look at the raw age. I mean, you got Zach Mathis, who by all accounts, a great kid. I got to tell you, when we did the BRTV with Cam Miller before South Dakota State, and I mentioned Mathis and the smile that came over his face, like you can just tell when guys are behind another player. Like he was so excited for Zach's success, but that's also a kid that from a snaps perspective, it's not like Mathis has been through the wars. Like I'm very happy for what Mathis is doing now, but it's not like he's got 1300 snaps under his belt. He doesn't. Braylon Henderson, kind of the same thing, you know, Lippy, kind of the same thing. Like it's a lot of guys without a ton of experience, and that's fine. They might be okay. You talk about Tyler Terhark, maybe, you know, getting a little bit more burn. Eli Green potentially getting a little bit more burn. They got the thoroughbreds in the stables still, and Mekhi Collins and Bryce Lance and certainly Carson Hagerly. The Kentucky Derby winners are still in the stables, but they're young yet. There's talent there, but now I think it becomes. I mean, everybody knows the best programs are player led. There's no question about it. But right now, it might have to be coach led a little bit in that wide receiver room and just kind of resetting and getting what they can get out of these young men with Phoenix heading out. And I want to just briefly discuss, and this is not in the script, but things I just want to say are not as dire as they appear. I'm going to pull up the FCS top 25 because we mentioned, or I have mentioned, you know, I kind of feel like this was the last losable game on North Dakota State's schedule. Now, that might not be the case. That's fine. They lose another game. I think that's on the table. I don't think it's likely, but it's on the table. But let's say they don't. They only dropped to 4 in the polls. The two teams between them and South Dakota State are Sacramento State and Montana State. Montana State, obviously, a you know team that they destroyed last year in a national championship situation. But Sac State misses Montana State this year in the Big Sky rotational schedule. So they won't necessarily get knocked off by Montana State. However, they do host Montana this weekend, host Idaho, who just, I believe, beat Montana. Then they got to go to Weber. I don't know that Sac State survives that entire thing unscathed. Now, talk about Montana State. Of course, they're going to have to play Montana. There's no rotating out of the Battle of the Wild or the greatness of the
Brawl of the Wild.
There you go.
Yep. I'll come in and save you.
I was just going to get screamed at by FCS football fans that I couldn't remember the name of that game. But Montana State, they've got the Brawl of the Wild, and they've got, let's see, Weber at home this weekend. I don't think at NAU or at Cal Poly is a big deal, but you could also certainly, and I don't think they will, you can make the case if it's 2 versus 3 seed and it's Montana State against North Dakota State. Well, I just turned on the replay of last year's FCS championship game, and I get that they're slightly different teams, but, you know, I mean, that's my point is I really do believe that there is no way if NDSU runs the table, they are any worse than the 3 seed. The way that things have shaken out and the fact that the voters who love nothing more than to drop NDSU after a loss have only dropped them down to 4, I really do think that if NDSU can – beat Illinois State, Western, UND, and
SIU.
That game in Carbondale might mean something there.
Yeah, that has a little more stake in the game now based off what the Salukis are doing.
If they win those 4 games, though, what the Big Sky just kind of does to itself, there's no way that they're not at least the 3 and probably the 2. And the only way that they'll see South Dakota State is in Texas, which is literally everyone's worst nightmare. But I think staying on the opposite side of the bracket from South Dakota State and not be in the four and having to do the semis in Brookings, I think that's on the table. So I just wanted to, kind of address the sky is falling stuff, because I think NDSU, now not everything is in front of them. They can win out and not win the Valley. That's very much the case. They could win out and not win the Valley. That was in front of them on Saturday and they didn't get it done. But I think the long-term goals of making it to Texas and getting a dub down there, everything's everything. Everything's on the table. Everything is what it is. Folks, Bison Report Radio podcast is brought to you by the good people at Gateway Chevrolet. Gateway Chevrolet is your truck headquarters. They are currently offering Silverados at invoice pricing. Yes, invoice pricing. Silverados are sharp, new, clean interior with larger touch screens. They got backup cameras, Bluetooth, Apple CarPlay, all of that. And they have four different engine options, and including adaptive fuel management. I've got the 5.3 liter, and that thing, for the size of my truck, gets phenomenal fuel mileage, as do most of the options. That 6.2 is a little bit of a hog, but it's fun to drive. Go check out the good people at Gateway Chevrolet on the I-29 frontage road or at gatewayfargo.com. What the hell, guys? It's my general feeling. You know, I think, to me, the game turned on and I'm not, look, this, I got nothing about the refs cost NDSU this game. I got nothing about that. But the game did turn on a call. The 15-yard penalty, because they score. They go up 28-7, and it is over at that point. That's all done. 28-7, going to half. We're done here. 15 yards on Cam. Cole Payton throws a pick in the end zone. South Dakota State doesn't score, but we'll get into it later. It really affected the rest of the game. I think if that bow and arrow celebration thing isn't called, whatever, Hunter rumbles into the end zone, Cole rumbles into the end zone, I don't care. Somebody rumbles into the end zone. South Dakota State's not coming back from 28-7. And I don't think North Dakota State goes into so much of an offensive shell, frankly. I think they keep pouring it on as opposed to trying to bleed the clock and bleed the game. Trev, you got any kind of overall takes? You said you had some positives. We don't have your positives on the show script here. So.
Yeah. Anytime you walk away from a loss, it's you always tend to look at the negatives more than anything. But yeah, I mean, that particular moment with the referee calling that on Cam, he was seeking that moment. By the way, he was staring at him in that video, and then the way he threw the flag. Again, it's not the ref's fault that NDSU lost the game. No one by any means is claiming that. But yeah, it's pretty much a consensus that it's like, let the kids have fun. Let them play ball. You know, but again, you can't, as a quarterback and a leader of the team, you can't even leave it up for chance. And hopefully that's just a good learning moment for them, is that guy, when those things happen, you just can't let it affect you. Just move on to the next play. It is what it is. They still had an opportunity to go score. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out that way with Cole getting kind of rushed and making a throw to try to make a play. But yeah, it's unfortunate that a ref kind of made it about himself in that moment. It's just, but it is what it is. You can't leave that up for question, I don't think. And hopefully they just turn around and learn from it. But that has been the story of this team so far to date, is being in their own way.
Jax, you got any general takes on this one? We'll get into some specifics, but just kind of your feel, your vibe. And, you know, we're doing this on a Tuesday. Folks probably getting this on a Wednesday morning, because I don't know what's going on with the bench warmer crew. We marinated on this one, partly because we won't have a preview show this week. I won't have a Bison Report show on Bison 1660. There's no football game. So we've marinated. You know, this thing at 7 o'clock Saturday night might have cost a little different. We might have had to have the beat button over for Mr. Gebhardt. I don't know. But, you know, this, we've marinated on this. We've had some time to think.
Yeah. Like Trev said, it's just shooting ourselves in the foot. And it's been the story all season for the most part. But what got me was that we got a tease of exactly what this team can be, and the potential of of exactly how we can operate. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. We go up 28-7 there, and think about this different conversation we're having right now. You know, rarely do we see a Bison team, you know, kind of fold into that shell and, you know, crumble a little bit in that second half. But it's something that we saw, you know, different things that we've talked about in previous weeks, in terms of negatives, you know, and weaknesses of play. It seems that we kind of regressed to in that second half. And I don't know if that's just because we put it on cruise control and thought that 21-7 was enough. You know, I don't know what the situation was, but yeah, it's just, it's rare to see. And, you know, with the performance in the first half, it was just more surprising than anything. So, you know, as Trevor said, there are some positives, and I think that first half was a positive, and that's something to build off. But yeah, rarely do you see a Bison squad, you know, perform the way we did in the second half after such a good showing in the first.
Well, and that's the other thing is Cam was excellent again. Even the way the game finished, I don't know. You could argue a drop by DJ Hart. You could argue the ball was a little behind. I'm not going to get into specifics. I haven't even honestly had the heart to look at the PFF stuff yet. I don't know who they dinged for, if they dinged for a drop or not. But either way, man, 17 to 22. Again, for, by the way, not dink and dunk either. I mean, he played way better than Gronowski. This is not debatable. Gronowski was 16 to 21 for 152 yards, and he took three sacks. Like this, the actual quarterback battle was won by North Dakota State easily. Unfortunately, they gave up 232 yards rushing, man, which you cannot do. But Cam 17 to 22 is 77%. I mean, come on, this is a joke. Two touchdowns, ran in another touchdown. Whatever issues they have, it ain't him. It's not. And I get people getting mad because at third and 10, he looked like he had an opening and ran into the guard or ran into whatever. He's trying to make a play on third and 10, probably make it fourth and manageable. Or maybe he really did think he could pick up that third down, you know, get those 10 yards. But you can't teach 77% completion at more than 10 yards a pop. Not 10 yards of completion, 10 yards an attempt. Camden's been awesome, man. And I think if you're going to take anything away from this game, it's like that your QB can keep you in anything.
Yeah, that was one of the positives I wanted to touch on, is that the play of number seven, especially these last couple of weeks, has been elite. And when you have a quarterback playing that well, especially come playoff time, that's going to bode well. Now, the team's issues right now that I see is that on a broader scope, they don't know how to put a full game together. That's just the reality. They haven't done that yet. They've got to prove that. So I'll challenge them on that. Go put four quarters together. And you go put four quarters together, it can be lethal, because this team for 20 minutes was the best team in FCS, and it wasn't particularly close. There is not a team that can even touch them, even with the full healthy SDSU and Tucker Kraft playing, to beating them if they play like they did the first 20 minutes. So it's almost as if they struggle to see when the knockout blow is right in front of them and then capitalizing on it. Doesn't mean they're not incapable. They're clearly capable. They showed that at the start of this game. They just hadn't came out in a game with that type of fire yet. And you're not just going to not – I'll backtrack. You're not going to have a season where you can't put four quarters together and then all of a sudden come out on Saturday and put four quarters together. The reason I was so encouraged is because they came out with their hair on fire. They needed to show that they are capable of doing that and having a galvanized locker room ready to roll. Now it's just continuing to back that up and then finding that knockout blow and releasing that.
Because we've seen sleepwalk through two quarters and then, oh shit, we have to win the game.
Yep.
And we've seen hair on fire. And then, you know, as the great Coach 30 would say, piss it down your leg. We've seen both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so now it's just getting that together. And I feel like it'll come. It seems like it will come. I don't know when or what week, but it needs to happen soon. and they start to do that, they will strike fear in everybody else. And it's in large part because of the quarterback play. When you have a quarterback playing that well and completing that, the type of passes that he can, and the throw that he made when he got the penalty celebration, or the celebration penalty, that was a dot, man.
Yeah.
That NDSU fear come playoff time when that bracket's released, it will be there.
Yeah, that ball to Braylon at the 3-yard line was sick. That whew, anyway, JB, do you have an issue with the Cole Payton interception, the play call? Because I want to discuss it, but I wanted to get kind of your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, first let me just say, you know, I'm not the most offensive-minded guru by any means, but I don't mind it at all. And it's one of those situations, we see it all the time, where if it's successful, you know, we're sitting here this morning or this afternoon here talking about how cool it was and how great of a play it was and creative and what have you. But obviously it didn't go that way. Did Cole make a mistake? Yeah, probably should have made a different decision. But, you know, at the end of the day, if a different outcome would have happened there, I think we're having a completely different conversation. So just one of those deals.
I'm with you 100%. And I was really just setting you up so you could set me up for a rant. I struggle with play calling guy always. It's always play calling, play calling, play calling, play calling. And it's the same guy that would bitch about, which I didn't hate, behind, we're talking about Arizona now, 4th and 2. You got your 230-pound quarterback, and you're running in behind your All-American fullback, behind your All-American left guard, behind your NFL left tackle, behind your NFL tight end. It didn't work. I don't hate it still. I understand it didn't work. You have to base the play call on whether it made sense. And the same guy who complains that, well, they just run it with 15. They don't ever throw it. So everybody knows it's a run when 15 has the ball. Okay, they threw it. Cole made a bad play. That's a Jimmy's and Joe's. That's not an X's and O's. And I think Cole Payton is going to be, at some point, an all-Valley quarterback for the North Dakota State Bison. He's a great kid. He's a very, very good football player, and I think a reason why they're going to win more games this year. He made a bad play. Rocket that thing out of the back of the end zone. Eat it. Do anything but float it over the middle. That is the one thing you can't do, is float it over the middle. Throw it hard. Or eat it. It cannot be floated. And that's what happened. And that's a young player making a mistake, and it happens. But you can't complain about the fact that they never throw it with 15. And then when they throw it with 15, bitch and moan and say, well, Cam was lighting them up. Why are you having Cole throw it? Because they shouldn't have been expecting it. They should have been playing run. And frankly, had that thing been blocked up better, the kid was open for an easy, not easy, but for a seam touchdown, or for at least an incompletion. Didn't get blocked up. You had to make a guy miss in the backfield, and then he threw a soft pass that got picked off. That's not play calling. You got to ask for execution, and we've asked for do something different with Cole Payton. Okay, here it is. It didn't work. Does that mean it was a bad play call? No. It means it didn't work. You still have to execute offensively and defensively. Trevor knows this. Jackson knows this. You can call the best play in the world. I mean, that I know, like, for example, you know, Polisek, when Carson scored against Illinois State, he called touchdown before the left guard or the center whiffs their block. It's still not a touchdown. I know the numbers were great and the look was great and it all went great, but left guard and center blow a block. It doesn't matter. It's still an Illinois State national championship. You got to execute, period. So that's my rant about the whole thing. I do have one issue. We'll talk about it later. In fact, no, we're just going to switch that up. I did not like Cam left on 3rd and 3. I think it was the possession before South Dakota State took the lead. 3rd and 3, your guy is at 10 yards a crack at 77%, and we're going to go Ogre left, and the whole stadium knows it's QB left, and you run QB left, and it doesn't get any yards. You don't even run QB left. You run with Cam instead of Cole. As much as I don't like play calling guy, I did not like that call. Trev, do you have any other issues with play calling? Because if you go on Facebook, which you shouldn't because it's a cesspool, or Twitter afterwards, honestly, Tyler and Matt should both be looking for work. And the entire loss was based on play calling.
No, it was not. I'll defend that to the death, and I'll die on that hill. There's certain moments that you can always point to that woulda, shoulda, coulda. Certainly, yeah, no one's going to be perfect. The only part that I will say from a quote-unquote play calling standpoint that I didn't like that I think set the tone for the rest of the game is I'm going to reference back to the series after the Cole Payton interception. NDSU gets a stop. South Dakota State punts the ball, and North Dakota State has the ball roughly about midfield. It was fourth and one. I can't remember if it was fourth and inches or maybe a long one. I cannot remember. We chose to punt.
Yeah, I hated it.
That right there, to me, I was standing up, screaming in my living room, call timeout, go for it, call timeout, go for it, call timeout, go for it. Because at that point in the game, the only stop they had was a throw made by a kid who hasn't been in that scenario that many times, and he is going to learn from it because his coach is Randy Hedberg. They had not stopped your offense. Don't take your foot off the gas. They hadn't done anything. That was gifted to them. And good for them. They capitalized on when it was gifted to them. They capitalized on the turnover that was gifted to them, and North Dakota State did not. And that's the difference in the ball game. So I thought, as far as play calling, the only instance is going for it on fourth and one, because you don't get it. I get it, but you're playing conservatively and say, okay, maybe we're going to turn around. They're going to get 3 points and get the ball at half. Well, okay, if they're getting the ball at half, all the more reason to try to keep the foot on the gas, because what? Okay, if they go down and score seven after that. So that's the only part that I would pinpoint that I really, really thought should be different. I think you are right in your assessment of Cam. Cam was spinning it well.
Yeah.
I mean, go with the flow. I mean, yeah, we want to establish the run and run the damn ball. I'm in that boat too. But sometimes go with the flow. Go with the hot hand. Cam was ripping it. If seven's ripping it and they're making good completions, run stop routes to the sticks and let those receivers make plays, because they were also making plays. So if that's the case and you can beat them on the throw because you have a mismatch there on the edges, which I think is the case and does bode well for NDSU come playoff time, do it. So hindsight's 20/20. Again, like Jax had said, if you have a different result, we're having a different conversation. But I think it's very positive, again, because there are so many good takeaways from this game that I really, really do foresee this team learning from. I really do. And there's a lot of them. But if they can put that together, I think what you're going to see is a team playing like they did the first 20 minutes. And that's why I'm encouraged by it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I am with you. I think that one, though, did kind of break the offense. I think that the Payton interception broke the offense, in the sense of they thought they could run the ball well enough to eke the clock out. Find a way to score 3-6 more points, 10 more points. I figure if they get to 31, it's over anyway. But it didn't happen. You know, you rush for 127 yards. 4.4 a carry is not terrible, but it's not Bison football. It's not, you know, how you normally get it done. It's not, certainly not how you bleed away a game. Hunter needs to get right. Tough kid, just doesn't look right to me, my opinion. 3.9 a carry against the Jacks, 15 carries. I didn't think he looked particularly like himself, even in the prior week's game against Indiana State. You look at, you know, that game and Hunter's at, 15 for 75. And while five might, you know, per yards per carry might seem awesome, Ganella had 12.8 and Tamarack had 11.2. That was a bad defense. I mean, Lipke needs to get healthy. And if that means, you know, maybe not playing against Illinois State and buying yourselves 3 weeks instead of two, I don't know. But Illinois State should be a game that they can get done without Hunter, in my opinion. Who knows? I don't know. I don't have a diagnosis. I just know that's a player that can dominate games in a similar way to Isaiah Davis And he just didn't look like himself in that moment. And this is a team, you know, that beat South Dakota 12-10 and beat Northern Iowa 23-21 and lost to SIU 14-19. Like they're not an explosive club, Illinois State. They might be a decent defensive club, but they're not an explosive club and they should be able to get away. Speaking of which, credit to Isaiah Davis. He was dinged up. Not surprising that Stig kept a dinged up player in the game, but I was really impressed with his work, JB. It didn't look like it was a lot of fun to bring him down.
Yeah. Like I said last week in the preview pod, he's a rolling ball of knives, man. And it was impressive to see how tough it was to bring him down and then to see how tough he remained throughout the game and staying in there and continuing to produce at a high level. So really impressed by him. He's been fun to watch. So yeah, all credit to him.
Because when he got hurt, it was noticeable, like the way he was running was different, but the yards he was getting were not different. And so very, very impressed. Trev, what were your issues with the second half? 0 points. Obviously 16 points given up. Good enough to get the L, 3 straight years. Why did the message at halftime fail? Why did the adjustments at halftime fail? What happened in the second half?
Let me keep this simple. And it was playing not to lose. And again, I think it goes back to that decision to punt the ball on fourth and short around midfield right before the fourth quarter. I think that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. I thought the defense actually played outstanding. I mean, South Dakota State on paper has a phenomenal offense. Before the season, Stig was talking about how this will be his best offense he's ever had. And they haven't fit that bill, in my opinion, this season. But nonetheless, they still have really, really good players. And NDSU's defense held them to, what, one touchdown in the second half?
Yeah.
You know, and the rest were field goals, which I was almost dead on with my prediction. I predicted 22-20 NDSU. I would have missed it by 1 point had that kicker for South Dakota State missed one field goal. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like you've got to just find a way to get something clicking offensively to get a score. And if you do that, or on the other side, you stop one drive that they did score on, you win that ball game despite playing lackluster and quite frankly, terrible in comparison to the first 20 minutes for 40 minutes of that ball game. So I'm going to boil that down to playing not to lose. And when you do that, it hurts, especially when you come away with a loss. And again, that is why I think this team will learn from that and understand, or at least they should, you cannot go into a game or flip that mindset at any point in the game. It's Missouri Valley. It's a team that wants to beat you. First of all, everyone wants to beat you. The rest of the country wants to see you fall. The tone when North Dakota State loses a football game is everyone else is elated. We're villains in their eyes. You're only a villain because you win all the time. And I know the expectation is so high and it feels like you're failing. It's not the case. As a former player, a guy that loves the program, I know when I say this, I can speak for a lot of guys. We still love you. We absolutely still love you. We're still rooting for you. Every goal that you want to go achieve is still in front of you. Now, winning the Valley becomes a lot tougher. You got to have help. We talked about that in the pre-pod. But you just can't play not to lose. That's not what it's for. If you go out and play with your hair on fire and the other team just beats you, so be it. They're a better team, nod the head, tip the cap, and move on. So come out with your hair on fire in the first and second half. Easier said than done, I guess.
JB, I want to talk to you about like philosophical changes on defense, because you've been I don't know if you're patient zero, but you're one of the guys. Kay is obviously being one now. Enoch Sibamana being one. Julian Wadarsik being one. Safeties that keep getting knocked down to linebacker. And it's fine. Look, it has worked in the past. I mean, shoot, they made a quarterback a linebacker in Essie Thornton. But my question and my issue, and this is something that Zach and I have talked about in years past, asking for more Mike Buteau last year, finding out that, like, when Quinn was switched to the offensive line, he was basically told that, hey, like, we're going to have a smaller D-tack room. Like, you're going to play O-line because our 300-pound guys are going to be on the O-line. We want to be smaller and lighter on the D-line across the board, smaller and lighter at linebacker, faster, able to defend the spread, able to, you know, all those things. I struggle with that. I brought it up in a press conference last year. Coach talked to me about, you know, Nick DeLuca not being there anymore, or, you know, saying, well, you don't see Nick DeLuca walk through that door. It's like, I don't need to see Nick DeLuca. You can bring me a Carlton Littlejohn. Give me someone who's 6'1", 220. I just don't need converted safeties trying to take on guards climbing to the next level, trying to take on centers climbing to the next level. I need a one tech, maybe, you know, built a little bit more by as a nose guard. And yeah, I get it. If you can't rush the passer, it's not that helpful. But the thing for me is, like, you can substitute. And that's been something that Travis Beck started, Jabril Cox continued, Jasir Cox. Those Sam linebackers that can run like nickel corners have put NDSU in a position where they're always playing the same 11, not the same 11, but they're always playing base, or a lot of the time they're playing base. And we've seen successful versions of both. We've seen the Beck, the Jabril, the Jasir versions. You've seen certainly, like, when it was, you know, Gio and Carlton, and no, they would take Gio off the field. They'd take Gio off the field and bring in Brian Shepherd and really be able to cover guys. But that's my thing. Like, teach someone nickel. I don't care. Give me a thumper on first down, and then give me a nickel back on third and long. I don't care. The guys don't have to stay on the field the whole time. Give me a Buto. Go find one in JUCO. Go find a nose guard that can't get moved, who's got, you know, 3 years to play too, and put him in there and continue to develop Eli's and Will Mostarts and guys that can get up the field like Javi Derrett. I just philosophically, I would like to have them at least have some bigger options up front, because this is something going back to the spring of 2020 where these safety converts at linebacker, it's just not going well against the run.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, obviously not being in the room anymore, I'm not really sure the exact philosophy behind anything. But I do know, you know, with what they're thinking is they're looking for guys that can play fast. And, you know, again, it's hard because you're looking for guys that can play fast and be in the right spot at the right time. And they're making decisions quickly. And that comes with confidence and learning that playbook over time and becoming more comfortable. And it's tough to ask that of guys who are just, you know, learning a position, or guys that are swapping positions or what have you. You know, so it's tough to say the philosophy behind it, but
guys that are 206 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah. And that too. You know, but guys in the past have made up for the lack of size, with playing fast, playing downhill and just flying around. Now, we saw a little glimpses of that in the first half, and we see glimpses of it all year. Now we need guys to be able to do it consistently. In terms of, you know, the physical size thing, again, it like, kind of like Coach said, you don't have a Nick DeLuca walking through that room. So, you know, maybe at the linebacker spot, that's something that comes with recruiting in the future. I don't know exactly, but for what we have right now, it kind of seems like they're trying to put the best guys in the best positions to succeed. And, you know, once in a while, when a guard does climb up to a smaller linebacker, we're going to see the mismatch there. But playing fast and playing confident is what gets around those issues. And, you know, we're seeing glimpses of it, but need to see it more on a consistent basis. You know, a lot of guys reaching for tackles, a lot of guys diving for ankles. And you know, that comes from being out of position. And that doesn't matter, or excuse me, and that doesn't, you know, necessarily reflect the size of a guy or the size of a position room. That reflects, you know, the confidence and the ability to go play fast and understand your assignments. So just want to see a little more consistent, you know, play and flashiness of these guys who are smaller and that have that athletic ability that some of these big guys don't.
And I will say that they are addressing it. I mean, I want, mm-hmm. like, I do want to be upfront. Logan Kopp, who's probably the will of the future, 6'1", 218. you know, probably has the ability to get to 222, 224. And then the two studs that they brought in Austin Altapeter is a three-star kid from Moorhead High. He's 6'2", 216 as a true freshman. You got to think there's 10, 12, 14 pounds there. And then Nathaniel Staling, who's stolen my heart. He was a quarterback at Brainerd that they played on defense and that NDSU is going to play at linebacker. He's 6'2", 227 right now. So that screams Mike to me, future Mike. Ex-quarterback, that kind of length, that kind of size. So the guys that are 220 and above exist. They are just not, you know, James Kaiser, who has spent 4 years in the program. They're not even Julian Wadarczyk, who's 6'3", 207, but has spent 4 years in the program. The guys that have been in the program that they quote-unquote trust are safety converts, are smaller dudes. It's just the way that it is. And right now they're not losing their job to the bigger guy. Now, obviously the guy we're not talking about, the 6'4", 230-pound monster in the room is Cole, is Wiz. And if you want a shining light, it's, can we put Eli Mostart's leg back together? Can we get Cole Wisniewski out there? Cause that's, you know, we talked about like last year's version of the Packers. When going out and getting Rasul Douglas to fill that outside cornerback spot. I know this is narrow casting, but even, you know, there's countless other examples of something like that in the NFL where something happens and some guy was on a practice squad or some guy was on the street or whatever, you know, might happen this year with Odell Beckham getting healthy from his knee injury. He might change someone's season. That ain't how it works. The only thing that can happen to your team during the season is what Phoenix did. Guys can leave. You cannot just, unless he's already in your student body. And I tell you what, if there's a 320-pound one tech in the student body that hasn't tried out for the football team yet, talk to your boy. I'll get you connected with Coach Goose. But other than that, there are no in-season acquisitions. That ain't a thing. So if you're looking for the bright light at the end of the tunnel, it's the fact that you've got Cole Wisniewski potentially coming back from a Achilles situation, and you're hoping and a praying that at least for Frisco, you've got Eli Mostert. That's your hoping and a praying. Where do you go from here, I guess, and what are they working on, Trev? What do you think the message overall is from the staff, offensively, defensively? What, you know, on the outside, as we mentioned, it looks like Rome is burning. What do you think it looks like on the inside?
Well, I guess for starters here, if my audio is coming in bad, let me know. My fan on my computer is just blowing right now. I think there's a lot. I think it's simply just, one, stay in the course. This team clearly has a plan to get better. They're getting there. They're not fully there yet. And then it's understanding that every play and every series can be game-changing. And the faster that this team understands that, the quicker they're going to get out of their own way. Because I truly do believe the talent on this team is the best in the country. And the only team that is going to beat them is themselves. The two losses that they've had this season, you can point to multiple instances where that has been the case. Now, I'm not trying to take away anything from South Dakota State. They clearly made adjustments in the second half that allowed them to win this football game. They are a phenomenal football team. And in my opinion, this should be the matchup in Frisco, not only from a helping the subdivision standpoint, just by the nature of the branding, with them talking about the Dakota Marker on college game day. That's a huge thing for the subdivision. And number two, I do think these are the best two teams. So when you're getting to those points and you're getting to those type of games and matchups, you cannot not capitalize when those moments are given to you to win a football game. And that is what this team has repeatedly done. So I would say it's just keeping your foot on the gas and trying to stick to the plan that you have and trying to put it all together. If this team does put together four good quarters and they find that, look out, because you saw what that first 20 minutes that entailed.
JB, any good bye week stories? What's this time like? I'm sure I honestly, over the last 10 years, I don't know how many bye weeks have come after a loss. I don't know many. Probably won't effort that one. It'll take a lot of time here, but just kind of the vibes around and what you guys do, taking care of your bodies, you know, what practice looks like, what the schedule kind of looks like with 13 days in between games.
Yeah, I'm trying to think right now if we ever had a bye week following a loss. I don't think so, but so I don't know exactly, you know, the energy within the room and within the locker room, but you know, one thing that's going to be emphasized is rehab in the bodies. The practices are still going to be tough, especially during the bye week itself. So this week, but it's going to be tougher for a lot of the young guys that they want to see develop. And it's going to be time for some of these guys to make some mid-season strides. Some of the guys that we've talked about, you know, as potential role players for us going forward here, it's going to be a big week for them. And then two, you know, I just wanted to, you know, more get into the philosophical side of things. I think this is the week that the captains are gonna step up and they're gonna take control. And this is where teams are made, and this is where great Bison teams are crafted and formed in adverse situations like this. And it's gonna be a lot of meetings. It's gonna be a lot of you know, reflection, looking at each other in the mirrors. And I'm really excited to see how these older vets handle the situation that's going on right now, and, you know, really come together and see, you know, what exactly we can do going forward here. It's going to come from those guys. And, you know, we talked earlier, the wide receiver room loses a fifth year guy. I just wanted to mention that Zach Mathis is going to be that guy in that room. And I'm excited to see that kid, you know, really take everybody under his wing. He's a great person, somebody I know, you know, dearly and well. And I know he's got a lot of pride in this program and a lot of pride in that receiver room. He's fought through so much adversity in his career. I'm excited to see what he can do and how he rallies that group together.
All righty.
I do want to, Ross, I'm going to interject here. I do want to kind of add something too. I mean, Jackson, I thought that was very well said. The sign of maturity to me with this group was from none other than number 26 in his post-game presser when he mentioned, I'm going to pull a line out of his book. I don't know if the players listen to this. He said, I don't know if the fans listen to this, but he thanked the fans and acknowledged the fans making a difference in the game. And he said, stick with us. It's a long season. The confidence in his voice and his body language when he said that gave me a belief in this team for this season that I haven't hit quite yet. That I believe they could win a national title, absolutely, by the talent alone. And the guys have already proved – there's a lot of guys in that locker room that have already proven they can do it because they did it last year. That statement spoke volumes to me. And I'm just super proud of him just acknowledging the fact that they know where they're at. And also the messages that I've gotten from a coach. This team now knows what they need to do, and it's acknowledging the fact of where they may have fallen short, and that's okay. A season's not going to go perfect. I think there's only been, what, three in this whole run of 9 out of 11? Has there been, what, three perfect seasons?
Yeah.
Is that it?
I think so. 18, 19, 13.
Yeah. So that moment I think was a huge pivotal turning point that it's so small and subtle, but it speaks volumes about the type of character that's going to be leading this group forward. So shouts to you, young man, on acknowledging that and bringing that to light.
All right. Shouts to James Kaiser. Shouts to Jackson Brown and to Trevor Gebhardt. And thank all of you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors, Tundra Insurance and Gateway Chevrolet. Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back in a week or so with a preview for Illinois State. Go Bison.